Very slight about relation with observations. Actually, the stuff will be about observations. So over the last two decades, stacking new observations from cosmology, from a qualitative science to quantitative science, and we now know that there was just six parameters that we can observe the, we can characterize the universe. And we've heard this morning that future observations are going to lead to an unprecedented era of precision cosmology, and the constraints of these parameters are going to be tightened even further, in particular as regards to inflationary sector. Now, inflation is a very successful theory. However, despite the successes, it's still unsatisfactory in a number of ways, and which I'm not going to go into, but for this reason, it's imperative that inflation is embedded in a UV complete theory, and indeed, as we'll see later on in this conference, so there is an increasing amount of effort devoted to embed inflation in string theory. And it's also very important that we also develop alternative scenarios that they may explain better the data. So the holographic approach that I'm going to undertake in this talk, in a sense, provides both, and you will see why. So specifically in this talk, I would like to address the question, can a coordination on inflationary cosmology be described in terms of three-dimensional quantum field theory without gravity? And the two are our main results, so I will start with this. So, and if you forget everything from this talk, I think I would like to remember these two things. So the first thing is that standard inflation is holographic in the sense that it will describe in this talk. And secondly, there are holographic models which have different phenomenology than slow roll inflation, but they're nevertheless consistent with current observations. And as you will see, they exhibit very interesting phenomenology. So the bulk of the talk would be in explaining these two points. So this talk is going to be based on two papers that already appeared, and one paper which is about to appear, and another one, or a series of other ones, which will appear shortly afterwards. And this is work with a postdoc in Amsterdam, former funded and a student, Anton Bronski. So if somebody comes and tells you has a theory, a holographic theory for cosmology, I think you should ask him or her two things. What is the dual quantum field theory, and how it can be used to compute cosmological observables? Or in other words, what is the holographic dictionary? Now, after having defined this duality, then the new description should recover established results in the regime where gravity is weakly coupled, because we know that in that regime, the gravitational results can be tested. But then, having established the duality always has two sides. There is one side where you can compare things and another side where you can make predictions. So new results should follow by using the duality in the regime where gravity is strongly coupled. And indeed, in my talk, I will have two parts. One part where I describe how I recover established results, and another part where I describe new models. So the first part, I will explain in which sense inflation is holographic. This is going to be done in three parts. First, I will review standard inflationary computations. Then I will review how to compute strong coupling quantum field theory results using standard gauge gravity duality. And then I will combine these two to show that inflationary results can be fully expressed in terms of correlators of strongly coupled quantum field theory. And then in the second part, I'm going to use that duality in order to have new models. So while standard inflation is linked to strongly coupled quantum field theories, the new models are going to be based on weakly coupled three-dimensional quantum field theories. And in this model, gravity is strongly coupled at early times. As you will see, this provides a new mechanism for scale invariant spectrum. It's very simple. And the phenomenology of these models is compatible with current observations, yet it's different than slow roll inflation. So in this sense, this provides alternative scenarios to standard inflation. Okay, so part one, how to build the holographic dictionary. So I will start by reviewing standard cosmological perturbations. So in this talk, for simplicity, I'm going to focus on a single field four-dimensional inflationary model that originate from an action of that form. So the potential is going to be general. I'm not going to impose any condition except that I want to have inflationary model. And I'm also going to assume, again, for simplicity, and also because that's what observation tells us, that the background is spatially flat. So we have background effort W of that form. Now, perturbing the solution, we find one finds that the physical degrees of freedom is the scalar field zeta, and the transverse space is metric gamma. And the equations we should satisfy to linear order are given in this form, where this epsilon here is the slower parameter, although I will not assume in the stock, we're not assuming in this work that epsilon is small. So now in the inflationary paradigm, cosmological perturbations are assumed to originate at sub-horizon scale as final fluctuations. And we quantize the perturbation in the usual manner, and then the two-point function is given in terms of mode functions that solve these equations. And then the superhorizon power spectra are given basically by the late time behavior of the mode function multiplied by q to the third after some normalization factors. Now, power spectrum is related to two-point functions. Non-Gaussianity is related to higher point functions. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on three-point functions of zeta. And this is computed using linear formalism via this formula. Fourier transforming, this leads to a formula of that sort. So different models are basically characterized by this function f q1, q2, q2, q3. So in preparation to the discussion to the connection to with holography, I'm going to rewrite this results in a suggestive form. So the first step, I define the so-called response functions via these formulas. So the pi's here are the canonical momenta of the variables zeta and gamma. And the response functions are defined by this. So the omega 2 is the linear part in zeta, omega 3 is quadratic in zeta, etc. So one can show that the mode functions are related to this to the response function omega 2 and E2. So this means that the power spectrum can be expressed in terms of the late time behavior of this response function. Furthermore, one can show that the three-point functions are also related to response functions. So the function f that we had here that comes from the three-point function computation is given up to some numerical factor, is given basically by the ratio of the response function omega 3 and omega 2. So that's the rewriting of cosmological results. So the main result for this first part is this functions omega 2, E2, and omega 3 are related to two and three-point functions of strongly coupled three-dimensional quantum field theories. So given those, then you can directly get the power spectrum or the non-Gaussian. Okay, so that's the end of the review of cosmological perturbations. Are there any questions? Yes. This are non-local functions. These are non-local functions. So omega 3, so this defines, so you show given pi and zeta, then you take, taking appropriate ratios, this defines omega 3. This is the definition of the response function.
X is zeta squared.
And yeah, this is a function of x. And this order, this is the gauge invariant combination of the second order.
But zeta is at, zeta squared is at a single position.
Yes.
What is gamma not entered in the expression for pi zeta? I would have thought gamma ij should enter in
The cats and earth should couple the same.
Yeah, they do. So this is in the dots, as I said here. The dots indicate the other terms. Mm-hmm. So in the actual paper, we're going to do not just the zeta, we're going to do all long Gaussian methods. So we have all the other terms here. So if you want the four-point functions, you have to expand this to cubic order. You have all combinations. So now, so the starting point for the connection between cosmology and holography is so-called domain wall cosmology correspondence, which I'm going to review now. So domain wall, so let me first define the words. So domain wall spacetimes are spacetimes of that form. So this depends on your radial coordinate. So this name is somewhat splitting because there's really no domain wall in the spacetime. So it's a historic accident that they have this name. Originally, this spacetime was reduced having the idea that at article zero there's a domain wall, and this interpolates between two different statics at article plus infinity and article minus infinity. So this is not what we're not using the term in this sense. We just want to say domain wall spacetimes. It just means spacetimes that have that form. And the spacetimes solve the field equations that follow from that action. And for simplicity, I'm doing the domain wall spacetimes in Euclidean signature, although one can easily do them also in Lorentzian. So the first element in the connection is the so-called domain wall cosmology correspondence, which states that for every domain wall solution of a model with potential V bar, there is an FRW solution for a model with potential V, which is minus V bar. So if we have a solution of this theory, then there is a corresponding solution of this theory. So the only thing that you do is you flip the sign of the potential. Okay. Now this correspondence can be understood as analytic continuation for the metric, and the flip in the sign of the potential guarantees that the scalar field remains real as well. Now, an equivalent way to state this fact, the split in the potential, is with my conventions of putting the kappa, is to just flip the sign. You take kappa squared to be minus kappa bar squared equals to minus kappa squared.
So this is a double analytic continuation. R becomes
R.
Yes.
R becomes.
But I have chosen to have my domain wall and Euclidean signature, so just R becomes P. So there's no. So at this point, this is just a map between solutions to solutions, and I don't use any regularized conditions. So why am I interested in domain walls? So I'm interested because they enter prominently in holography. So because they describe holographic RG flows. So let me first remind you a couple of things. So the AGS metric is the unique metric with the isometry group is the same as the conformal group in D dimension. And this is the main reason why the bulk dual of conformal field theory is an under-the-city spacetime.
R goes to IT.
R goes to IT.
But the metric won't stay real, right?
So the way to think is you just put T there, and minus there, and this is the map. So don't view them. So you can understand this also as double analytic continuation, and we also have done this in this paper, in the paper with Paul shortly after the original paper. But not to confuse the issue, so the map is really you put a minus here and you rename R as T, and then this map the FRW to a cosmology, and you can understand this also as an analytic continuation.
Yeah. So if these are completely homogeneous, so at this point this reduces to one-dimensional model, and then you can see that you just take T to R, just maps it to models, provides it to change the sign. So actually, at the time we thought this is very special property just from the homogeneous background, because you really use the fact that we use this to one dimension. This turns out not to be the case.
Do you use that T as a holographic unit?
So you will see how I'm going to do holography. So the domain of all spacetimes are the more general solutions to say geometric group is the Poincaré group in three dimensions. Therefore, if we have a quantum field theory that is Poincaré invariant in three dimensions, then the bulk solution must be of that form. That's why this type of spacetimes are interesting. Now, there are two types of domain wall spacetimes which holographic interpretation is fully understood. So the first is the domain walls which asymptotically become ABS. So this means this function A of R goes to R, R goes to infinity, and the scalar goes to a constant. And the interpretation of this in holography is that this corresponds to a quantum field theory that in the UV approaches the fixed point. And the fixed point is the CFP, which is dual to the ABS, which is approached as R goes to infinity. So the second type is the one where you have logarithmic asymptotics. So the A of R behaves in this fashion, phi of R behaves in this way. And this case is only fairly recently understood in the papers. So specific examples of these asymptotics are what one gets by looking at the near horizon limit of the non-conformal brains. But this holds more generally because this is just a special case of this asymptotics. So these solutions describe quantum field theories that have a so-called generalized conformal structure. So this means that all terms in the action have the same scaling. There is a dimension-full coupling constant, as opposed to a conformal structure. This has this type of generalized conformal structure. So for this type of space-times, one can basically do all computations one can do for asymptotically ABS space-time. So let's see what happens when we use the domain wall cosmology correspondence, what happens to this particular spacetimes. So the asymptotically ABS domain walls are mapped inflationary cosmologies that approach the Sitter plane times. And the second type are mapped to solutions that approach parallel scaling solution to plane times that become of this form. Okay, so now we started from cosmology, then we saw that at least the background solutions can be mapped to domain walls where we understand how to do holography. So now I'm going to review how to do holography. Yes? Yes. So n has to be greater than 1. Well, this comes from technical conditions in setting up the holography. It may work, but we don't know how to. Yes.
The difference between this and the Hessian spectrometer to do so-called DSCMT, just your choice of flat spatial spaces?
There is a difference in the continuations, and it's also, I think, a difference in let's say the philosophy. This I haven't gone there yet, but there is a difference in how I do the analytic continuation. So you will see. So you will see later on. There was another question.
Is there a good decoupling limit for these in the second?
Yes, there is a good decoupling limit for this.
Okay, so you do get a decoupled field theory.
Well, you get in the decoupling limit the different regimes, and the description here is in the regime where you have the generalized conformal structure. So this is the regime where the dynamics of the theory is governed by the dimensionality of the coupling constant.
Is that a field theory?
That's a field theory. Let's say the easiest example is...
Without gravity?
Yeah, so the easiest example is just due to take maximum symmetric getting those theory in three dimensions. Yeah, that's one of the simplest examples. And you will see later on in the talk some specific field theories. Okay, now to explain holography, I'll try to briefly review some standard things from gauge gravity duality. So the basic dictionary has two elements. So the first element is that there is an one-to-one correspondence between local gauge invariant operators of the boundary quantum field theory and bulk shaping gravity modes. In particular, the bulk metric corresponds to the energy momentum tensor of boundary theory. And the second issue is that correlation functions of these gauge invariant operators are extracted from asymptotics of bulk solutions. So let me explain a little bit that part, because I'm going to use this. So the standard gauge gravity duality is based on spacetimes that are asymptotically locally under the sitter, or asymptotically locally power law, mainly with this asymptotics. But for easing presentation, I'm going to focus on the AGS case in the slide. So the fact that we have an asymptotically locally AGS spacetime means that there is a conformal boundary, and near the conformal boundary, Einstein equations with negative cosmological constant hold. So this fact implies that the metric is universal, and four dimensions has the form I indicate over here. So this is not an ansatz. This is these more general asymptotic solutions that can appear. So this G naught ijx is the metric of this where the boundary theory lives. So this is a general metric. So this is not just Minkowski. And it's also the source of the boundary stress energy tensor. So this blue piece is not very important, but this piece is very important, because one can show that that piece encodes the correlation functions of the boundary theory. So one can derive a general formula, a general relation between the stress energy tensor and V3. And I'd like to emphasize that this formula here requires, the only thing that requires is that Einstein equations near the conformally boundary fault. It does not require that Einstein equations fall everywhere. In particular, it is valid also when curvatures are large in the interior. Now, that formula is really derived with very few assumptions. So this, in particular, it falls in the presence of sources. So this means that higher point functions are obtained by differentiating this formula with respect to the sources and then setting them to the background value. So if you want to compute an endpoint function, that what you need to do is you need to differentiate n minus 1 times G3 with respect to G0. Again, G0 is this piece over here. Yes?
Do you mean that there are some local equations maybe modified by infinite number of terms in
yes.
the interior, but they are not important?
They are not important in the boundary.
But there has to be some differential equations.
Well, I mean, one could envision that, let's say, in the deep interior, you don't really have a local description. It's like a string theory, and there's only sigma model description. So the point is that G naught, let's say, technically, G naught is really a non-normalizable mode. So this means that in the quantum theory, I have to fix the non-normalizable modes. And this just fixes the boundary conditions for the quantum theory. It doesn't use anything else. It says that the information about the dynamics is really carried about this coefficient, but the asymptotics does not determine this coefficient.
Yeah, I'm sort of curious about that. The fact that G2 is determining in terms of G0, but there is an independent part, and the canvas space as part of G3 is not determined. So that, I understand, follows from Einstein equations, but...
It comes from the Einstein equations holding near the boundary. That does not come from, let's say, that doesn't have, you don't have to have the Einstein equations holding in the deep interior. So this really comes when we go here, when you actually want to compute correlators using gravity. So then you really need information about deep interior. And that's what I'm having here. So this means that if you want to solve the theory, so what you need to know is you need to know G3 is a function of G0. Now, ideally, we give this problem to a mathematician and tell you that's the answer, but unfortunately, they don't know how to solve this problem yet. So, in practice, what we do is we do this perturbatively. So, if you want to go from gravity to quantum field theory, this means that you start from a specific solution, background solution, and then you perturb and solve the perturbation. So two-point functions are obtained by solving linearized fluctuations, three-point functions by solving quadratic fluctuations, etc. At this point, it is crucial that the gravitational approximation is valid, and this means that the correlators you extract now are really correlators of the strongly coupled quantum field theory. But now, one can go the procedure the other way around, so you can start from the quantum field theory and try to reconstruct the bulk. So given quantum field theory correlators, one obtains, so by reversing the steps, this leads to an asymptotic solution. And if the quantum field theory correlators are that of the weakly coupled quantum field theory, then the box description has prescribed asymptotic behavior, but is strongly coupled in the interior. Okay. So now with this preliminaries, I'm going to go and discuss correlators for holographic RG flows. Yes?
Strong coupling, what exactly? Can you show it the parameter in your theory?
You mean in the bulk or in the boundary? So from the boundary perspective, the theory has typically is an Ezulin gauge theory and has a coupling constant like the Young-Yield's coupling constant. And the parameters is N and the top coupling. So being able to do three-level computations in gravity means that you're in the large N limit. And whether the top coupling is small or large means whether you're in a strongly coupled regime or a weakly coupled regime. So when I say here it's a strongly coupled QFT, this means top coupling constant is large. And when I say here weakly coupled QFT, this means top coupling is small. And you will see more specific examples in the last part when I will discuss specific models. And there is an equivalent description from the bulk perspective. Okay, so now we go back to domain walls. So if we want to compute correlation functions for the domain walls, what we need to do is we need to perturb around the domain walls and solve the perturbations. So the linearized equations were analyzed a number of years ago for general domain walls. And although we didn't write them in the way I write them over here, one can rewrite them in this fashion. And then one observes that these equations here are exactly identical to the cosmological perturbations I gave you earlier, provided we take Q and continue this to minus IQ. And exactly the same holds to all orders. So the correspondence is not just the correspondence between the homogeneous solutions, but it's really correspondence between neighborhoods around solutions. Okay. So now suppose we solve this theory.
Since you brought up these considerations, yes. I mean, if you just took an ADS CFT, you'll hear that we understand that all scales, meaning in some sort of uh-huh. And you try and continue it, you don't immediately get an inflationary or consider solution at all. Instead, let's just require factors of pi to do that. And
the consider
inflation solutions that we
find are much more complicated. So the problem in let's say, the DeSitter CFT period was that people tried to continue, let's say, the bulk ABS to bulk DeSitter, and that doesn't work.
Right, it's not as simple as just.
But that works, because, so here, what I map is I map the observables in cosmology to boundary correlators, not to correlators in the bulk. And that works.
The boundary correlators are bulk correlators just taken out to infinity. And, I mean, is that analytic continuation essentially coming from the statement that if you take a positive mass excitation in ADS and you do an analytic continuation, you get a tachyonic excitation in DeSitter, so then you need to take mass to I mass in order, or dimension to I dimension in order to get something positive mass in DeSitter. I mean, I think that's...
I mean, one can try to...
At the level of two-point functions, that seems to be...
One can try to, let's say, rephrase it to see, you know, what happens in the back, why it didn't work. But the fact is that if you follow the formulas, if you map the cosmological umbrella with the boundary correlators, all the I's are precisely in the right place.
So we have to take Q to IQ, which is...
Yeah. Well, of course, there is this continuation, right?
It's like taking mass to I mass, or energy to I times energy.
There's also just completely different models to go from ADS to DS.
Yeah. So it maps one model to another.
So you're saying for every ADS CFT correspondence we have, you have a DS CFT?
Yes. Well, it's not. For every ADS, I have a DS.
No.
And yes, and can you tell us the decay rates for those decinter spaces, or are they completely?
No, this is off shelf. What you're doing is off shelf.
Well, okay, so this is what I asked at the beginning, because you know your original formula had A going like R to the ADS,
yes.
And a naive analytic continuation would give sort of IT, and that would not have E to the T, it would have E to the IT. So that would be oscillating stuff.
Yeah, so I'm not getting oscillating, I'm getting the...
But your rule was not an analytic continuation.
No.
You said, replace R by the letter T, and just change the sign on one component.
Right.
Okay, that looks like an ad hoc procedure, which I thought, you know, was just a trick that worked for this, you know, given all the symmetries you have and all of that.
Yeah, so we have model 1 and model 2. Mm-hmm. Model 1 is with potential plus V, and model 2 is potential minus V. So for every FRW solution of the one that is in the main wall of the other, and then I do perturbations around these solutions, and then the perturbations are mapped exactly to each other, provided I also continue the momentum in that fashion.
Yeah, this is also not a continuation. It's also a prescription.
Okay. So I give you map from one to the other, and if you follow that map, you map exactly the equations. And everything.
So in the future, you have a solution also Q going to an IQ
because it's
in the potential that's minus the potential of the ADS model.
The previous solution was also
similar.
Yes.
Provide examples. Is that all we need? Because that sounds a little bit more.
So the only thing, so given any, let's say you give me any model that has a split ADS solution with some potential V. So then I just change the sign.
No, but if I ask for a complete model, it would be a complete model. I can't just change the sign of V. I have to.
So if you want to, in the box, have a UV complete model, then, okay, I don't know whether all these models will have UV completion. At the same time, if I use holography, the boundary theory is well defined, as you will see in a minute. Then
so
I would like to define
the
sign.
Sorry to discuss this one more time, then I'll show up. The ADS model has a potential that looks like this because there's positive conversion that gives a negative term of the potential energy, and then there's flux that gives a positive term. Now, if you're trying to flip that, there's no way to get flux to give a negative term. Flux has positive potential energy, period. Curvature you can make to give a positive term, but the jump from one type of model to the other can't be as simple as literally taking your ADS model and flipping it. But there are other ways of getting potential relative shape that might be done. Is that a fair characterization?
So if you ask me how to get this correspondence in string theory, then I don't know at this point. I know how to get some models in supergravity, but I don't know in general how to get them in string theory.
So these are only classical correspondences, or you think this should
no.
Is classical. Right.
So at this point, I show that the solutions are mapped to solutions, and now I'm going to show you how the quantum correlators in the Sitter or power law are mapped to correlators in boundary theory.
Let's take the simplest thing, ADS 5 plus S 5. Okay,
yes.
We know the dual theory.
Absolutely.
Now, are you saying that there's certainly that you're allowed to continue that dual theory, and then that corresponds in some
that
way?
That corresponds to specify
with an imaginary number of units of flux on the S.
Are you saying
we haven't reached?
If you wanted to take Eva's analogy seriously, that's what it would.
So n becomes imaginary. I agree. We're going to reach that point.
I mean, it's a prescription.
It's a prescription. Yes.
But I don't think that's what you're claiming, right? You're not really.
Let's continue. So at this point, I'm telling you that what maps to what. So this, let's say. These are not expectations, so these are the things which we have shown. Okay, now suppose you want to extract a two-point function or a three-point function for the holographic algebra law. So schematically, what you do is you want to expand the perturb solutions near r equals infinity and then extract the piece that has the scaling. And then the part which is linear in fluctuation is going to give you a two-point function. The part which is quadratic is going to give you a three-point function. And a better way to do that is to use, again, response functions. which are defined in a similar fashion than in the cosmology. The only difference is that the spies are now radial canonical momenta. Namely, we use radius, we have a Hamiltonian formalism where the radius stays there all the time. And then one can show, let's first do the two-point functions, that so the two-point functions are really given in terms of this response function. So this is the more general form of two-point function of this transcendence tensor. It contains two terms. One piece is about information about the transit spaceless piece, and the second piece is about the trace piece. And these two pieces are just given in terms of the specific piece of the response function defined over here. And similarly, there is a holographic formula for the three-point function, which should appear in one of our next papers. Now, actually, this requires quite a bit of work because the analog of that formula, at least to our knowledge, is not known. So we have to work out what is the more general form, and we have. So that involves 10 unknown functions. In any case, so for if we just focus in the case.
Fine, but you can have this prescription for going from ADS to De Sitter solutions. But once you start talking about correlation functions, you're talking about integrating over virtual particles and stuff like that. And so you also need to make sure that your I epsilon prescriptions and choices of contours and all of that stuff is analytically continuing or continuing in the correct way. And so that's something that you...
No, that works too. So at least with three-level
correlators, everything works. We haven't done loops. We haven't done loops.
Classical, not GR, classical, whatever.
We haven't done loops. And okay. It's not clear whether...
Classical in the bulk, but you're going to start using quantum mechanical answers in the CFT. And
you will see also in the model where I use really the quantum field theory,
right.
It still all makes sense.
But at the correspondence you've given me is at this point something I only trust if it's classical in the bulk.
So at this point, I mark the equations to equations and solutions to solutions. Mm-hmm. And then so at this point, I tell you if I use the standard rules of ADS-CFT, then the three-point function of the trace of the stress energy tensor is given again by the response function. Okay? This part is ADS-CFT. I haven't done a continuation yet, so I'm going to do it in the next slide.
Just one small clarification. So usually when you do ADS-CFT in your method, so you have to do some initial coefficients so that the normalizable parts say doesn't correspond to some vacuum and not to some.
So I can do both. I can do both. So in this paper, so since we're doing Euclidean, so this means that we're just using the standard vacuum. And the condition is regularity in the interior. But we can
so,
definitely
so
change
the state. So you need a regularity condition in the interior to get the solution?
Well, at this point, I'm not evaluating this. So to get this, I don't need this. So if you give me the domain wall and you ask me what is the three-point function, I have to evaluate this for you.
Right.
And if I evaluate that for you, I will need regularity in the interior. At this point, I just express the answers in terms of solutions of differential equations with certain properties.
That's
right.
So, can I ask another question? And unfortunately, honestly, I've already asked this, but if you just flip the sign of potential, even if you do it by hand, and the De Sitter solution is at the top of the most stable maps, right?
The ADS is on top of...
The De Sitter is on top of the
ADS stuff like this.
The ADS
usually are maximum, right? So for ADS, they're usually maximum.
It's above the
main one.
It's above the Lightmoner Friedman
band. Potential in ADS goes down.
Yeah. So then for the Sitter, it goes like this.
The potential in an ADS.
No, it goes like this, right? It's
well,
almost.
There's a negative CC minimum.
So he's assuming the M square is negative also. These are one of those allowed fractions.
In ADS. There's some ADS solution that you get by looking at a potential that's negative and has a minimum that negative value. So if you flip that, it's going to have a maximum. I mean, it's going to have an extra
That's, are you assuming that your mass is negative, yes or negative, that square is negative, so these are
not studying that sector of the theory, I think.
No, I mean, I'm not, it's really very, no, I'm not assuming this, so this, all of this are for any solution that has this assumptive effect. But typically, the typical case is that the AES is the maximum of the potential, it looks like this.
What you continue is the four-dimensional momentum, and you don't violate the on-shell condition in the box.
Yes. Okay, so now I'm going to combine the two. Okay. So let me summarize what I said so far. So the domain wall correspondence maps the near boundary region to the late boundary region, part one. Secondly, the combinations I described is to take the Newton's constant, the minus Newton's constant, and Q to minus IQ. And under this continuation, the response functions continue in the fashion I indicated over here. Now, if you want to express, and actually do want to express, the continuation in quantum field theory language, this looks somewhat strange. So you take the number of colors, so we minus I the number of colors. So it's not, after the continuation, doesn't look like normal quantum field theory. So this is what we meant to do. So what happens when you do this continuation? So we've seen earlier that this is the formula for the power spectrum. So this means that if I do the continuations, this is expressed in this fashion. So if you give me the two-point function of the quantum field theory, this means you give me A and B. Then I do the continuation, plug them here, and this gives me the power spectrum. So the usual formula for the power spectrum just has incited the fact that the two-point function of a strongly coupled quantum field theory after some continuation. So let's go to non-Gaussianity. So in this case, I told you that okay, this is the three-point function. Yes.
Calculate some power spectrum. That's really a bulk quantum effect. Because there's an H bar.
So I did the standard computation and I just rewrote it, right? So I said that the standard computation.
I mean, an ADS, it's a bulk quantum effect. Like an ADS, I would sum over modes with particular normalizable boundary conditions. And in DIA, after I do the analytic continuation, does that go over to the right boundary conditions that I would do if I were doing the.
Yes,
So it's not. So your statement is it's not the case that I only trust this for tree level stuff. I should also be trusting it for higher loop.
So I believe
bulk higher loop.
So we have shown it for tree level. I believe it also holds for beyond tree level. But of course, the actual proof is for tree level. Okay, so. Now, if you go to non-Gaussianity.
Okay, so earlier I told you that one can rewrite this function f. So this is the standard in computation expressed in different variables in terms of this response function. And we've seen that the response functions continue this way over here. So this means that the three-point function is just expressed in terms of correlators of strongly coupled quantum field theory and then doing an analytic continuation. Okay, so that's completely general for all models. So this is the summary. So we're interested in cosmology, and we want to have some kind of field theory. So the proposal is the following. So for every cosmology, there is a holographic RG flow via this correspondence. Now, for the holographic RG flows, there is a kind of field theory via standard gauge gravity duality. And then the proposal is to do the computation here, and then do the analytic continuation. And that defines what one might call pseudo quantum field theory.
2 minutes. Wow. Okay, so next I was going to tell you about additional holographic models where you really use weakly coupled quantum field theory. So this is the type of model.
So this just contains a number of vectors, a number of scalars, and a number of fermions. So all terms in this section have dimension 4. So if you want to do the power spectrum, we need to compute the two-point function of the stress energy tensor. And then the result just follows from general argument. So the stress energy tensor has dimension 3 in 3 dimensions. And one loop amplitudes are independent of the yields. So this means that in general grounds, this is the answer. So if you plug it in the holographic formula, then you see there was a Q-cube. And there's another Q-cube here, just on dimension grounds. So you get automatically that the spectrum is scale invariant. Now we know observationally that the amplitude is very small, and here we get it to be like 1 over n squared. So this, the smallness of the amplitude is just related to the fact that n is very large. So this is something like 10 to the 4. So I don't think you need to do any quantum loop. So this justifies a posteriori just using the data, the talk catalog, and this is a good approximation. Okay. That's the actual answer if you actually do the computation. So the scalar spectrum and the tensor spectrum just depends on the field content. And then you can look for sublooping corrections. So that would come from two loops. So we're still doing this, but one can already see what is the structure. So the difference, so ns minus 1 is going to be proportional to the effective coupling constant. And we already know observationally that this is something like 10 minus 2. So this means that the effective coupling constant of the theory is something like 10 to minus 2. So this means that a posteriori, you also justify treating the quantum field theory to two-vector ring. But the sign of ns minus 1 really depends on doing the computation. And here I kind of give some more details. I think you have time. I'll skip this. But now, independent of all the details of the theory, the scalar index runs. And that's because there is 1 over 2 here. And it runs in a universal manner. And this running is qualitatively different than slow roll inflation, for which this ratio is for the first order in slow roll. And in the beginning, we thought this would be excluded by data. But that's what the data give. So this is WMAP 5. And this is our curve. So you can see this really runs through the data. And over lunch, I actually compared it also with WMAP 7. And it becomes even better. So this shrinks and tilts a little bit towards the curve. And then we can go on to do non-Gaussianity. So our direct computation for the for this theory I just described gives this answer. And this answer depends on this CB, where CB here is just the number of, it's a combination of, this is the number of vectors and the number of scalars. And because of that reason, because it only contains the CB, so this means that when you applying it in the holographic formula, one finds an answer that does not depend on the field content. That's a really universal formula for all these models. And it turns out that it's the actual answer is the sum of two known templates. It's just the local, the template for the local SNL and the template for the equilibrium one. And the actual answer is not that far from what many people expect. So this is something like roughly 5. This is independent of all the details of the theory. And just for comparison, so observationally, so these are the two templates that feature over here. And observationally, this is the latest value from WMAP 7. For single scalar slow roll inflation, this is the value which is just predicted, where we get something like around 5. And that's the value for the SNL, the equilibrium one. Okay, so two more slides and I finished. So, so what I presented today was I presented a holographic description of reflection cosmology in terms of three-dimensional quantum field theory with no gravity. So when gravity is weakly coupled, this description correctly produces standard inflation predictions for all cosmological observables. And when gravity is strongly coupled, we found new models that have weakly coupled quantum field description. And furthermore, we initiated a holographic phenomenological approach for cosmology. So I presented models very quickly that have three main features. They have a nearly scale invariant spectrum of small amplitude primordial fluctuations. They have a very strong running, much stronger running than slow-roll inflation, which is this within order. And the three-point functions of curvature perturbations is exactly equal to the sum of the local and equilateral form with this values for the FNL for the local equilibrium. So thank you.
Coffee break is in peril, so I will allow one question by someone who hasn't made a comment or asked a question. Okay.
So according to this picture, at late times you are near the boundary, at early times you are further down. So that would suggest that your theory must be infrared free, right? In that case, I'm a little bit confused because the theory you showed us is asymptotic. In
three dimensions. No, I mean, the only thing that... No. This holds for all theories. So what I said is that I can tell you what is the late time behavior given a quantum field theory.
The late time behavior, that means you are near the boundary, and that's where you have strong coupling.
No, it's late time behavior. This is late time behavior, right? This is after that I have hot big bang. So there's no boundary. So I'm not doing, let's say, things in ADS. So this is really...
We're not talking about ADS. But if you want to map, I mean, you're mapping some ADS theory in cosmology. So where your theory is strongly coupled, that's where your cosmological theory will be the large classical universe, which means today, right? And then when you go back is where you do your calculation to map with to match with inflation. That's where, in fact, the coupling will be weak, because that's what the theory you're working with. That could mean that you have a theory that's actually infrared free.
No. I mean, the theory here is well defined in the infrared, but kind of non-trivially, because the dimensionality of the coupling constant acts as an effective cutoff.
Isn't this asymptotically free? This is a standard.
This is three dimensional.
Yeah.
Three dimensional giving this couple of scales and permeance.
Well, I suggest we continue the conversation, the discussion over coffee. So let's thank Tasha again.